So the subject we're going to take up today is, for me anyway, a really interesting one. There are a number of examples in Chazal of where a single Tana dissented from the position of others, and there was controversy as to how to deal with that dissent. That's a theme. It occurs in a variety of places in Shas, and we're going to be looking at one of them today, which has a whole number of interesting wrinkles and complications. It's very powerful, I think, to me, and dramatic agadata, and it relates an historical event. This is not fictional. This relates to an historical event. And let me share with you a bit about the background of this agadata. There is an historical background. This event, dramatic event, took place after the defeat of Bar Kokhba and the quelling of the rebellion. There was almost a complete collapse of Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael as a result of the Hadrianic persecutions. That was the period of the Asara Haruge Malchus, Rabbi Akiva, and other Chachma Yavna were killed, destroyed, and the Lom de Torah, the Talmid Chachamim, the Tanaim of that era were scattered. Those who remained, many were killed, like Rabbi Akiva, and those who remained were scattered in a variety of directions. It was around after the demise of Yavna as the center of Torah learning at that time that Rosh Hashanah ben Gamliel sought to reestablish Torah learning and halachic authority in Usha. And so Usha came to be the successor to Yavna in the history of the Tanaim of that period. And so Rav Shimon Gamliel is now working to establish Usha, but in the aftermath of the catastrophe of the failure of Bar Kokhba's rebellion and the persecutions, Tanaim scattered to different directions. Usha eventually became a main center, but it wasn't yet. And the Tanaim scattered. Some went to the north and part of Eretz Yisrael, some for the south. They went in different directions. And Hananya, who was the nephew of Rabbi Yoshua, was a Yored. That is, he moved from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. Now, we think of Talmud Bavli, we think of Bavel as being like the great center of Torah learning, and it came to be, but it wasn't yet. There was very little Torah learning, major scholarship at this time. Everything was focused on Eretz Yisrael. But Hananya, sometimes called Hananya, sometimes Hananya, we'll call him Hananya, he felt that the best future for Jews, given the Hadrianic persecutions and the failure of the revolt, was in Chutzlar, so he moved to Bavel. It was a controversial move. It wasn't too common. Most, Talmidei Chachamim wanted to stay in Eretz Yisrael. There was a Jewish community in Bavel, going back a while, but it didn't have the great, Talmidei Chachamim that Eretz Yisrael had. So his was a somewhat audacious move out of Eretz Yisrael into Bavel. So that's the kind of historical background. Remember, it's a period of great crisis, catastrophe, destruction. Jews were not allowed into Yerushalayim at that time. Jews were persona non grata in Yerushalayim as a result of the Romans. So it was a really horrible period in Jewish history. Chairs over here. Horrible period in Jewish history. So you need to understand the background, the crisis and the catastrophe and the destruction. It was just awful. So that's the background. Now we'll start the Gemara. You see where it's marked off? There are two sides. One is the Bavli, the other is the Yerushalmi. Make sure you're on page one, which is the Bavli. The Gemara begins as follows. Amar Rav Safra. Rav Safra said, Rabbi Abohu, everybody with me? Everybody with me? You're looking at the Yerushalmi. Flip side. Bavli. Rabbi Abo Havi Mishtoi. Rabbi Abo used to relate this story. So we're getting this now third or fourth hand. That's what the Gemara tells us. Rabbi Safar of Safar is saying that Rabbi Abo told the story about what happened with Hananya. But that's what we have. Kishiyarat Hanina. Here it says Hanina, but if you look at Hagos, Mahari Landa, Sarach, see off on the side there, Sarach Lomar Hananya. And in fact, the Gemara itself, our Gemara, our Sugya, calls him Hananya, the next da. That seems to be his more widely accepted name, that he appears as Hananya elsewhere in Shas. So we'll call him Hananya. So, Kishiyarad Hananya ben Achi Rabbi Yehoshua Legola. When Hananya, the nephew of Rabbi Yehoshua, was Yored and went into Golis, which is Bavel, he did something which was very disturbing and controversial. And that was Hoyama'aber Shanim Vikoveya Chadashim Bechutzlars. He intercalated the year. He determined which years were leap years, Shnas Ibor, which years were not. He took over the authority of controlling the calendar in Bavel. Now, just it seems like, okay, you control the calendar. But, you know, we have calendars. You get the calendars every day, you know, every Rosh Hashanah, before Rosh Hashanah, you pick up the calendars in the, you know, pharmacy or in the kosher grocery store. But that's not the way it always was. The Sanhedrin needed to establish when Rosh Chodesh was and when, you know, it would be a leap year. And whoever had the power to do that controlled Jewish life. Because, you know, when is Rosh Hashanah? When is Yom Kippur? Like, pretty important questions. And these issues, tensions over this go back. You may remember the story of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel. Sukkot's Rosh Hashanah. Very famous story. Maybe we'll look at that at some point. Excuse me? Yes, exactly. It's exactly correct. It's not. I don't think it's an accident. This was a family. They had strong family views about how to do the calendar. In any case, Rabbi Gamliel insisted that Rabbi Yeshua was wrong. He forced him to walk on Yom Kippur with his shoes when Yeshua thought it was Yom Kippur, because whoever controls the calendar has massive authority over from life, over the Jewish community. And Hananya leaving Eretz Yisrael was in effect asserting that the Golah was the new center of Jewish life, and Eretz Yisrael had no Chachamim who were capable of doing this. So he was wresting authority from Chachmei Eretz Yisrael, whoever remained, which wasn't much. That's really his argument. And vesting it in Bavel. Now, this throughout a millennium of Jewish history, this is more, really. This is a great tension over calendar. You may remember during the period of the Gaonim, there was a huge battle. Sadia Gaon was a leader in establishing Bavel as a center for establishing the calendar, and there was a Chacham, a Gaon in Eretz Yisrael, who was opposed to it. There were huge battles. These battles over calendars, you know, afflicted Jews for well over a millennium, and we're seeing an early version of this. So that's what he did. Shagru Acharav Shnei Tamidei Chachamim, those who remained in Eretz Yisrael, sent two emissaries, two Tamidei Chachamim, to Hananya, as we'll see, to re-seize control over the Luach. And those two Tamidei Chacham were Rabbi Yossi ben Kippar uben beno shel Zechariah ben Kabutal. One we have the name for, Yossi ben Kippar. The second one was the grandson of Zechariah ben Kabutal. What's his name? We don't know his name. The name is not given. It's interesting that we don't give the name. And the reason, I think, probably, is because, as we'll see, Zechariah ben Kabutal himself... Well, let me read another line or two and you'll see what his significance was. Kevin Shirazam, as soon as he saw them, Hananya saw these two folks, Eretz Yisrael, Amalahem, Lama Basem, why did you come? That's not a very welcoming comment. Shalom Aleichem, can I help you with some food? You need a place to sleep. Welcome to our Beis Medrash. You know, he could have been a lot more welcoming. Why do you think...
It's pretty surprising why they came down to
Israel. Exactly. It's surprising that they came to Israel. In fact, the Iyun Yaakov points out that it's Usser. Not allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael. So part of the question is, like, what justifies your coming down? But Hananya was apparently the greatest Talmud Chacham of his era, he says, and that seems to have been the case. At his exact cohort of Talmud Chacham, he was the one left. And he was obviously very smart. He realized that what he was doing was very controversial. So you might have suspected that these two emissaries from Eretz Yisrael were not here as harbingers of peace. He might have expected that they had an agenda. So maybe that's why he responded in less than welcoming terms. Lama basa, why did you come? Amrule, they said to him, Lilmo Torah banu, we came to learn Torah. Now, from the perspective of the Yaakov, that's their heter. One heter for leaving Eretz Yisrael is to learn Torah. So if he was asking them a halachic question, how could you leave Eretz Yisrael? The answer was to learn Torah. But let me ask you the following question. As the story unfolds, they didn't really, in any obvious or overt sense, come to learn Torah. They basically came to critique and subvert and overthrow Hananya. They had a very aggressive intent, as the story unfolds. They were very, very aggressive. We need to look at how comfortable we are with how aggressive they were. But they were. So what's this Lomo Torah Banu? Is that not being disingenuous? It's like not even truthful, it seems. So what do you think they're saying? Are they lying? Yes. Excuse me?
How are they going to critique him? Like, argue with him?
Okay, right. And actually they talk in learning. And they disagree with everything he says. He says kosher, they say treif. He says treif, they say kosher. As we'll see. So, at one level, they are coming to learn Torah from him. And the argument would be that one way to learn Torah is to disagree with a Talmud Chacham. That's a way to learn. See what he says. See how he responds. I still think it's a little disingenuous, though. I mean, maybe technically they're learning Torah from him. But maybe, you know, you could say that ultimately they wanted guidance from his perspective and Torah perspective on how to approach this tension between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz. Hashkafa, Torah. Yes?
I thought if he convinced them that they wouldn't have tried to get rid of him, so they actually didn't want to hear his arguments, and he persuaded them.
Yeah. Maybe it seems they had no interest in hearing his arguments or saying that. They just came to wipe him out. There's no question. I mean, as you'll see, the dialogue comes out. But maybe they did want to hear in a broader, because he didn't really argue. Well, he does argue with them. That's not true. As we'll see, he does provide a justification for what he's doing. So maybe that's a part of it. Clearly, in any case, Lilmo Torah is a little disingenuous, even if it's technically true, and their whole engagement maybe is a little disingenuous. Anyway, Hichruz Aleihem. So he publicly proclaimed about him to his followers in Bavel, and he had a whole community. He took his Talmidim with him into Gola, into exile, and he had a whole community around him, as we'll see. Hichruz Aleihem, Anashim Halal, excuse me. Hichruz Aleihem, Anashim Halalu Gedolei Hador. These people are Gedolei Hador. Ba'avoseihem Shimshu LeBeis HaMikdash, and their fathers served in the Beis HaMikdash. Ka'osha Sheshaninu, as we learned, Zechariah ben Kabutel, the grandfather of this person who came to visit him. Omer Harbe Pa'amim Karisi Lefanav B'Sefer Daniel. Many times I read before the Kohen Gadol Sefer Daniel to keep him awake. Before Yom Kippur, it was important that the Kohen Gadol be awake the entire night. The Mishnah in Yuma talks about this. And they didn't want him to fall asleep. So Zechariah ben Kavutel was one of those people who read him Sefer Daniel I guess it's very exciting and stuff happens. It's a very exciting sefer, so in the hope that it would keep him awake. So he played a role in the avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so a couple of... So now we have a little... Now we know a little bit about this, the grandson of Zechariah ben Kamuta. We know who his grandfather was. Why do you think we're not given a name for him?
Because he's incognito.
He's incognito, okay. Well, he's not incognito because we know who his grandfather is, so he's not totally incognito. But why do you think he wasn't given a name? I think, yes?
So they don't respect him?
No, at this time, no.
And the Gemara is showing that they don't respect him.
Interesting. That's an interesting suggestion. The Gemara seems to basically support Eretz Yisrael, even though it's Talmud Bavli, but this whole thing seems to support Eretz Yisrael. It seems to be, but that's an interesting question and worth thinking about. I would say that we have a name for one and we have Yichus for the other. And I think that Chachmei Eretz Yisrael wanted to, in effect, send a message to Hananya that the name of this, the one we have a name for, is a Talmud Chacham. He stands on his own merits. And he engages in dialogue. He's a Talmud Chacham. We know him on his own merits. The other person they sent has Yichus. And what they were trying to demonstrate, I think subtly, perhaps, to Hananya, is that just because you went to Bavel, it doesn't mean that Eretz Yisrael is arid of Torah learning. We have the first one, who is Yossi ben Kippar, who has a name. He's established a name for himself as a Talmud Chacham. And we also have Yichus in Eretz Yisrael. You can't shove us around. Our grandfathers were the ones who were involved in the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur. So they're asserting two points, very subtly, about their stature as Eretz Yisrael. We have Torah learning and we have Yichus. Don't mess with us so readily. Okay. Why do you think he's so extravagant in their praise? The Gedolei Hador. Why do you think he's so extravagant? What? Why is he? Seems exaggerated. I mean, okay. But he doesn't really know Yossi ben Kippur at all. He knows, the Mishnah. He knows his grandfather. But why does he all of a sudden give such extravagant praise? Yes.
Smart. You want good friends and family, you need your review.
Oh, very good. It's a good rhetorical strategy. If you praise your adversary, maybe he will be less adversarial. Which is your point you're making. I think it's an excellent point, and I think that's part of it. Another part of it, I think, is he believes that the center of Torah learning has now, under his leadership, migrated to Bavel. So he's saying, these great people, they came to me to learn Torah. In other words, he is, in effect, he is vigorously asserting his leadership, Torah learning, and the centrality of Bavel, because even these Gedolei Hador came to me. These aren't some, schleppers. They came to me. In effect, it builds up his position.
And he took their minimal Torah seriously.
Yeah, at this point, he's probably taking it seriously. Yes, exactly. Exactly correct. Okay, so now the story gets more interesting. He started, they're in the Beis Medrash in the yeshiva. As I mentioned to you in the past, in those days, the yeshiva sat in an organized fashion. People came to ask shilas, and the head of the yeshiva, the Av Bezdin, whoever was, the head, would sometimes answer himself, would sometimes provoke a discussion. Monks is telling me, and that's how they learned, and that's how shilas were formally paskin. Eventually, the head of Sanhedrin, the Av Bezdin, they would make the final decision. So people would come in to ask shilas, or they would have discussions and learning. Hu metame vehe metarim. He would say, hey, so this is tame, and they would always disagree and say it's tar. Hu oser, vehe matirim. He would say, this meat is treif, and they would say, no, it is kosher. Now, why are they doing this? Exactly correct. They are undermining his authority. You think that you are, such a great Talmud Chacham? They just disagree with him. Does this trouble you? Anything about this trouble you? Think about it.
Yeah,
hey! Yeah, wait a minute. If this is treif, how could they say that it's mutter? We know they have an agenda. And that agenda was to re-establish Eretz Yisrael as the Merkaz, the center of Torah learning. They have an agenda, okay, legitimate agenda. But how can they pervert halacha just to make their point? Maybe a legitimate religio-political agenda, but what are they? Now people are going to start eating this. You know, how could they do that? Isn't that troubling? So we need to think about that. Yes.
Unless they thought it was just being
machmir,
and they're saying, we're not pulling your
homa. Okay. So the Ben Yo-Yoda takes this, one of the classic Mepharshim, they got it. He takes a similar position. Not quite as understanding as yours is, but they say that they only disagreed with Tameh or Usser when there were legitimate grounds to do so. Notice, they didn't say, "Oh, pork, that's kosher."
Awesome.
Notice, they're not gonna say that something that is clearly treif is mutter. But where there were tzedadim to take a different position, then they would take a different position. A little bit like you're saying, yours is a little less close to pshat because you don't see anything here about chumras. These are just general machlokasim. Although your approach is legitimate, but that's not the way the Ben Yehuda goes.
I think it's also noteworthy that they're only being neighbor. It's tomorrow. They're only being neighbor using not the way around.
Good. Excellent.
I'm not sure why.
Good. You're absolutely right. What's the reason for that? That would be much less disruptive. You are a Mekel, we want a Machmer. Okay, you know, there's room for somebody who wants to be Machmer. They're not, you know, a Posek, somebody, the Rav can Paskin Mutter. Another Posek could say, no, I want to be Machmer and say it's Usser. We know Poskin like that, they're often Machmer. Right, so it doesn't mean that they're necessarily totally disagreeing with the Mekel, they're just saying, you know, let's be Machmer. That's much less subversive. If you say something is treif, and I say, no, go ahead and eat it, it's perfectly fine. That's much more subversive. Anyway, that's the Ben Yehuda. So he clearly, very self-consciously, softens what is disturbing about this Gemara.
Why was Hanina always saying Asur? Or just, he said lots of things, and they chose a couple of things.
Yes. Yes, he said. I don't know if it was everything, but they dafka chose wherever he said usher to say mutter. It sounds like these were shilas that came up in the yeshiva.
Where does that sound like? I mean, they were coming to learn Torah, and now they're in the base, not halacha l'maaseh.
No, they were often halacha l'maaseh. No, they were often.
We
don't know, but that often's what happened. They were.
They're coming to learn Torah.
Yeah, and they were often practical shilas that were asked. It's probable that.
I didn't even know that.
We don't know. We don't know that, but that's off. No, we don't know that, but that's usually the way.
It's not necessarily
Mutter, but
yeah. They
call it the Torah Adif, only if, in fact, it's truly Mutter.
Right.
But they have an agenda.
Their agenda is, right, that's what they're doing specifically.
That's what's disturbing about this. Now, the Ben Yehuda softens it. Okay, I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean,
I think they have an agenda, but I don't know who says.
I understand what you're saying, but that the way the yeshivas operated typically was they often have practical shilas, so I'm not sure, but that would be the very fact that the Ben Yehuda is struggling with this, and the Marsha also, I'll tell you this, Marsha, so they took it that way, because that's the way the yeshivas usually operated in those days.
They're trying to establish Torah authority. It sounds like they're trying to establish Torah authority.
Yeah.
So it sounds like it's a mindset.
No, it could be even in the base medrash they're just disagreeing with him, but that's not the bit. But they often operated with shilas. Yes.
They weren't the ones possibly, right?
That's an interesting point. I mean, ultimately, the yeshiva would follow the psak of Hananya because he was the head of the yeshiva. So they didn't have the authority actually to revoke his psak. But nevertheless, they were teaching contrary to him. So maybe it doesn't have. That's a very good point. I like that point. In other words, maybe it's not. It's another way to soften it because nobody would listen to them anyway because he wasn't the head of the yeshiva. So nobody would ever actually be over an Avera. Yeah, right. That's a very good point. And the Mepharshim don't say that. I like that very much. Thank you for that suggestion.
It also goes further because they don't think that Yochanan reached Lachis. Yochanan went crazy because he didn't have any argument with me because that actually strengthened his division. So of each other actually, it's like the exact opposite. They're actually helping it.
He doesn't perceive it that way, and they don't perceive themselves to be accurate.
In terms of that result,
you should know the Gemara asks this question on the Amud Beis. But the Gemara asks it in a different way. But the Gemara is also troubled by this question. When we get there, but I'll show you how it's different from what the Ben Yoyada is struggling with. But the Marsha, and maybe we need your approach, because the Marsha just seems to assume, I didn't Xerox it, that they, even if there were no grounds for being Makel, they were Makel. He just says, they just did it. He seems to disagree with the Ben Yoda, which is pretty disturbing, and maybe that would be your explanation, would really, the Buchan approach, maybe that would help. That's often the Marsha, because the Marsha really troubled me. Like, how could he say that? The Ben Yoda doesn't want to go that far.
I'm saying, it's a great answer. Ben Yoda's doesn't seem he's saying, they're just coming to...
Lacanter.
Yeah.
All right, let's continue. So immediately he says, Hichrus aleihem anashim halalu shel shavheim, shel tohuheim. Before he was saying they're hichrus aleihem, publicly announcing to the community they're dolei adar, all of a sudden they're shav and they're tohu. Amrulo, they said to him, kvar banisa v'yata yechol listor. You already built us up, you can't destroy us. Kvar gadarta v'yata yechol lifrots. You've already built a fence around us, and you can't smash that fence. So what's this double, shav and tohu?
Well, they also do a double response.
Yeah, this is correct. That's a very, very good point. It's from a literary perspective. They do a double response, maybe because he says shav and tohu. So the question is, why did he use both phrases? Why did he say, shanashim halal shal shavheim, or shal tohu? Yes.
Point where you're saying that Torah and Yichus, Shav, that's not Torah.
Good.
Yichus is
very good. Yes, that's very good. That, I think, is the explanation. It matches the two. Shav, Torah? Shav is false. It's not there. There's no Torah there. Tohu, what's Yichus? Tohu, who cares what your grandfather did? Are you a good guy or not? So it really matches, I believe, the two persona that came. Yes.
And that note, it would follow a chiastic structure by the response, because Banisa would sound to be, it would be like, you can't destroy our lineage, or Gedder seems a reference to be Torah, so he says this, and then this, the response.
Very good. Excellent, excellent point. I wasn't thinking about that. That's an excellent point. The Banisa and the Gadarta may be a reference to both of those. Very, very good point. Excellent. Wonderful ideas. Okay, let's continue. Amalehem, he said to them, "Ibnei ma ani mitahir v'yatem mitaharim." Why is it the case that every time when I am mitame, you are mitahir, ani osir v'yatem matirim, I forbid and you are matir? Amrulo, they answered to him, "Ibnei sha'ata ma'abir shanim v'kovei achadashim b'chutz laretz." You're doing something that is profoundly disruptive to how everything operated for millennia. And as the Gemara says later, it's based on a pasuk, Ki mitzion teitze Torah, Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. So who are you to have Torah, Dvar Hashem, coming from Babel? That never happened. Everything was always centered in Eretz Yisrael. Very disturbing. If you think about it, we live in the Gola, millennia and millennia of Talmid Chachamim, Talmud Bavli, we're not shocked by it. But project yourself back to this time when Eretz Yisrael was it. There was no Torah significantly anywhere. Who would be to take Torah of Eretz Yisrael? It's a shocking thing. It's like rubbing salt in the wound of the Churban. We lost the base of Mikdash, and now you want to make Bavel the center of Torah learning? That's horrible. It's horrible. You have to think of it in those terms. Okay, Amrulo, they said to him, I'm sorry, I skipped. Amar Lehem, he said to them, V'halo Akiva ben Yosef ha'yim ha'aber shana v'kaveh ha'chadashim ha'chutz laretz. I did not innovate this. Rabbi Akiva, for a brief period of time, was constrained to leave Eretz Yisrael, and he was ma'aber shanim and kaveh ha'chadashim. Don't think I am the poreitz geder, talking about geder. I'm not the one who established the idea that Torah authority can reside in Chutzlaretz. My great predecessor, Rabbi Akiva, the generation before, not that far before, but the generation before did the same thing. Amrulo, they said to him, Hanach Rabbi Akiva shalohi niach kamosu be'eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Akiva was the towering Talmud Chacham of his era. There were no Talmud Chacham of his stature in Eretz Yisrael left. Therefore, their response is, only Rabbi Akiva had the authority to be Me'aber Shanim and Koveya the Luach in Chutzlaretz. You don't have that authority. I'm going to analyze this in a minute, but let's finish the dialogue. Amar lehem, he said to them, Af ani lo hanachti hinachti kamosi b'Eretz Yisrael. When I left Eretz Yisrael, I was the greatest Talmud Chacham of that era, which they don't disagree with. He apparently was the greatest who survived all the persecutions and the torturing and the murdering and the martyrdom. He was the one who survived. He was the major Talmud Chacham. So my stature is exactly like Rabbi Akiva. My relative stature is like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva can do it, I can do it. Amrulo. Again, we're going to come back and analyze this. Gidiyim shehinachta na'asu tiyashim. The little kids, kid goats, that you left have now grown up. Ba'ale karnayim. And not only have they grown up, they have horns. What is that an allusion to? That's a threat. He is threatening him. Number one, yeah, when you left, you were the man. You were the greatest Talmud Chacham. But the younger generation, they're no longer 12, or 14, or 19, or 22, or 27. They have emerged as alternative centers, alternative Talmudei Chacham. You are not, no longer it's the case where Rabbi Akiva was superior in stature to those who left in Eretz Yisrael. These young bucks, shall we say, to use a similar metaphor, have grown up. And they have horns. V'heim shigrunu etzlach, and they sent us to you. V'chein amru lanu, and they said to us, l'chu v'imru lo, go tell him, b'shmeinu in our name, im shamea mutav, v'imlav, Yehei benidui. We will excommunicate you. They are pulling out their artillery. And that's the horn. And we'll see this continues. Their aggressive acts just begin. So, a lot of issues are raised here. First of all, the emissaries of Eretz Yisrael concede that, I'll use a fancy term, it's used in contemporary scholarship, topos, it's a Greek word which means place. Topos, or place, does not always override scholarship. You have two poles that are pulling in the opposite direction. You have the topos, the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, pulling in the direction of only Eretz Yisrael. What's Bavel? What's New York? What's Lakewood? Eretz Yisrael. And then you have the argument that pure learning should be koveya. What is the most important factor in according halachic authority? Is it place, Eretz Yisrael, particularly when it comes to being koveya the luach, or is it scholarship? Now, these emissaries concede that sometimes scholarship trumps, if I can use such a term. Scholarship wins, because Rabbi Akiva, that was the case. He was a great Talmud Chacham. But they're arguing that that disparity no longer prevails. So now we see that they don't have this absolutist position, Eretz Yisrael or bust. It's become a little more complicated. And they're conceding. But nevertheless, they're not conceding that in Eretz Yisrael they're no longer great Talmud Chacham. There are. And they're tough. And they will attack. So don't think you're going to get off so easily. Yes?
Right, I'm saying they definitely agree Torah is a deciding factor. But once you have Torah and Eretz Yisrael, that's it. It's together combined. You don't compare it. They're like both.
That's correct. But, you know, if
you have Torah, then you can. If you go after Torah, the input service. But now it's total inerrancy service.
Let me ask you the following question.
Yeah.
Remember that there was little in the way of writing in those days, and the Masorah was in many ways oral. Hananya was a great repository of learning. He had it in his brain. I don't know how much was written down. There may have been some writings were written down, but much of it was Torah Sheba Al Peh, right? So if Hananya is now in Bavel and they're in Eretz Yisrael, where are they going to get his knowledge? So what Hananya is arguing is, yeah, I know people grow up and they learn hard and they steig and they grow, but they're relatively few svarim. I have this knowledge in my brain and they haven't consulted with me. How could they ever become the same? How could they ever achieve my level of learning? So his argument is that they could never achieve my level of learning, not because they're incompetent, they just, well, they're a bayim died. And they're relatively young. They have much more Torah to absorb. Now, there were certain notes, there were brises, there were things written down, but a lot of it was Baal Peh. That's why it's called Torah Baal Peh. And so he's arguing, not that there can't be Torah learning in Eretz Yisrael, but he's arguing that he is the authority. He's got it all in his head. So how could they ever achieve his level? And we'll see that the Rishami, when we get to, addresses that question. I really should probably run ahead, you'll excuse me, but the clock is marching. So what's happening is they're using the power of Eretz Yisrael in a very, very aggressive, in a very, very aggressive way. One of the real questions is, does this end justify the means? It's one of the big questions here that this Gemara raises. I mean, he was a towering Talmud Chacham by their own concession. Are they treating him nicely? We'll put you in Nidui. I mean, can you imagine going to a Gadol Adar, even like another yeshiva, competing yeshiva, and we'll put you in Nidui, we'll put you in Cherem? Like, that's pretty rough. Now, their argument is this is the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. A lot is at stake. So they're arguing that the ends justify the means. Is that, it's something that is definitely worth thinking about. They're using halacha. Sometimes you want to think of psak as sacred, as sacrosanct. It can't be touched for any political, even legitimate political. Psak is psak. Emes is emes. But they're playing with it to make a point. So for them, obviously, the centrality of Eretz Yisrael is of towering significance to them, such that they're willing to play with psak. They're willing to place somebody whom they regarded as being a towering Talmud Chacham in Nidui. Very, very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. Okay, so let's continue. Next little section. They go on and they get even tougher. The Imru L'Achenu Shabagola. And they say, go tell... The Beis Din, you're still there. The Beis Din that sent him told the emissaries to go to their brothers in Gola. Now, to speak to your community. And here's what they tell the community. Im Shomin, if Hananya obeys, you're not going to believe this. This is like shocking from the language he uses. If Hananya obeys, muta. If he submits to our authority, good. Vim lav, and if not, look what he says. You won't believe this. Yalu lahar, they should go up onto a mountain. Achya yivne mizbeach. Achya was the leader of the secular leader, political leader of the community in Bavel at that time. He should build a mizbeach. Hananya yinagein bechinor. Hananya should start playing his instrument, because he was a Levi, the Mefarshim say. This is Rashi's explanation about both of these. Levim sang. So Achya should go, Achya, the political leader, should go build a bama, and you should play on the instrument. We have no chelek in Hashem. In other words, what they're telling is, if you continue in this path, just go ahead and build a sacrifice to the idols. Go build a bama. You sing Hananya and you build a mizbeach. You're all a bunch of kofrim. very, it's very shocking. He's like, but you're a kofar. Go build a bama. Go play your instruments for Ovid Avodah Zarah. Can you imagine telling that to the Gadol? You know, the person who's the greatest Talmud Chacham of his era, probably, or may have been, certainly was at one time. It's an amazing thing. And what are they doing? They are using the Jewish community. They are fomenting a revolution. Hananiah is the head of the community. And they are appealing to the populace to reject Hananiah. And that's what happens. Miyad go kol amibchia. They immediately all broke out in tears. The Amru, Chas v'shalom yesh lanu chelek b'elokei Yisrael. People reject Hananiah. And they pay obeisance. They're loyal to Eretz Yisrael. And Hananiah is left without a community. They scare them. These are what we would call in contemporary language populist tactics. We've seen that in the election. You scare the people. And people get very, very upset. That's what Trump did, Lahavdil. It's populism. It's a kind of mode of... So this is what they were doing. They were scaring the people. And the people rejected Hananiah. What happens to Hananiah? The story ends here. The whole Bavli story doesn't tell us what happened. Did Hananiah accept the authority of Eretz Yisrael? Did he not accept it? Did he remain in Bavel? Like, what happens? We're left holding the bag. It's like, whoa. How could the story end so abruptly without any conclusion? What happens next, which I will read very quickly because I want to look at the Yerushalmi and time is definitely running late. The next is the Gemara's commentary on the story. So I'll read it. There's some very interesting issues. But I want to get back to the story itself and look briefly at the Yerushalmi. The Kol Kach Lama, why were they so aggressive, the Gemara? How could they have been so aggressive in attacking Hananiah? Mishum Shenemar Ki Mitzion Teitzei Torah Dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. Eretz Yisrael is the ultimate place of authority and not Bavel. Then the Gemara asks, B'shlamo hu mitayar v'heim mitarim l'chumra. They're machmer fine. Elohu mitame v'heim mitarim, but if he's mitame and they are mitayar, as the Gemara said, Hechidami, hechahava, how is it possible? Tanya, chacham shetime ein chavera rishoy l'tayar. A chacham that said something is tame, his chaver can no longer say it's mutter. Now that's not quite, there's a whole machlokas rishonim about why this is. It's a very famous issue. Lots of people don't want to go to a Rav to get a psak. They are afraid to say usher, and then they're stuck with it. You ever heard of that? You know, you go shopping. And I'm really not asking your Shiloh. Could you just, like, you know, fill me in? Mm-hmm. You ever heard that? Okay, so it comes from this, playing a game, but it comes from this whole sugya. So my focus is showing him how this works. If one Talmud Chacham Posek says it's usher, nobody else can say it's mutter. So there are different shitas. The Ravid holds that it's shavya chaticha di yisura. He makes it into a cheftza. Once he says usher, that meat becomes a cheftza disur. That's one shita. I don't want to go into it. I don't have the time. But Rashi and the Meiri maintain it's out of the covet for the first Talmud Chacham. What's the nafkamina? So the Rishonim say there are a couple of nafkaminas. Can he change his mind? So if it's only kavod, so he's changing his mind. Or he's allowed to change his mind. It's no longer affecting his kavod. Or let's say a Talmud Chacham or a Bezdin that's greater. It's not affecting his kavod because it's he's a well-known world-class posek and you're a regular old Rav in your community. So those are different. They're nafkaminas as to how this works. And the Gemara is working with this. And now that issue of Chacham Shetira Ein Chavera Rishay Latayr, they're willing to work with that. Ki hechi delo nigruru basre. They were afraid that this would create a schism in Jewish life. Remember, with lots of schisms, Perushim, Zadukim, lots of problems in Jewish life, they didn't want a schism of Bavel doing its own thing. So that was... Now, just quickly, let's turn the page and take a look at the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi has a different version of the story. I don't have the time to go into all the details, but in the Yerushalmi, instead of sending two emissaries. One of them was Rav Nassan, different emissaries. Rav Nassan, who was himself from an Olev from Bavel, so he was like a good person to critique Hananiah. They sent somebody who was himself a Bavli, Rav Nassim, who moved to Eretz Yisrael, they sent letters. So there was no dialogue like this between the emissaries and Hananiah. They just said, well, it was a little more respectful. There's nothing in here about being Matir, what he was Matame. The Yerushalmi's version is more respectful, more peaceful, not quite as confrontational and contentious as the Bavli, which, by the way, is generally consistent with the Bavli versus the Yerushalmi. The Bavli is a much more... Talmud Bavli is full of much more machlokas, it's much longer, much more contentious. Whereas Yerushalmi, they left fewer arguments, fewer machlokas, and it's a general... So it's consistent with that general difference in approach between Bavli and Eretz Yisrael. I just want to look at how the story ends. A lot of interesting things, but let's have this look how it ends. They try to work with the people to foment a revolution a different way. I won't go into that right now. It's interesting too, but eventually, you see the last underline? So a few lines that I'm alone, Gabon, come Reb Nassim, a few lines from where it's underlined. See that? Come Rav Nassim, the Asher. I don't want to start from there. I want to start from where the lines are underlined. Amarlan Gab. Azal v'kibel alei gabe Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseril in Etzivit. After this whole exchange, a little different from the Bavli, after this whole exchange, Hananiah goes to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseirin Nitzivin. Nitzivin was in the Golah. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseirin was the first major Talmud Chacham to establish a center of Torah learning outside of Eretz Yisrael, but it wasn't in Bavel. It was in northern Syria. Nitzivin is northern Syria. So he went to the senior posek outside of Eretz Yisrael to ask him what to do. Amalei achareyim achareyim. You should follow them. Amalei. So he said to him, Lina yada mashafgas taman? Man muda li de'inan chachimim. Machshava kavase. Do you know what I left behind me? Do I know that these are people who are now as learned as I am? So he responded, Mekaven do amar lo chachimim de kavase yishmunle. As long as you don't hear that they're not chachamim like you, you have to listen to them. Mekaven de'inan chachamim. Since they are the Chacham, you should listen to them. In other words, since you don't know that they are less knowledgeable than you, Ms. Suffolk, you have to listen to them. So he's passing like that. He's fasting like the Eretz Yisrael. Even though he's in Bavel, in the Golah, up in the Sivan, he's saying you have to listen to them. As long as you don't know that they are less, not qualified, you have to follow them. So look what happens. Kam Rachav Susya. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira got up on a horse. Hein de mata mata, hein de la mata noag in Bekilkel. Wherever he was able to get to Bavel, he traveled to Bavel to notify them that you can't follow Hananiah anymore. And wherever he got to, they were corrected. And wherever he didn't get to on the horse, and they still followed Hananiah, remember this is before the internet and telephones, then the Kilkel, they had not, they ended up making a mistake. So clearly the Yerushalmi, not surprisingly, Bavli leaves it open. Bavel. Okay, it's maybe a little more sympathetic to Bavel. The Yerushalmi makes it clear that the Mesorah goes to Eretz Yisrael. Isn't that interesting? Different than Bavli and Yerushalmi?
Bavli says he was more aggressive. It's like, we had to give in because he was so aggressive to us. Yerushalmi is like, you gave in because...
He doesn't say he gave in. That's the point I want to make. The Yerushalmi doesn't say how Hananiah responds to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. Doesn't say, okay, you're right. He's silent. And who gets up on the horse? At least the way the Carbon 8 understands it. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira gets up on the horse. We don't know that Hananiah ever recanted. So we have an ambiguous end to the story. In the Bavli, it's totally left open, whereas the Yerushalmi, clearly kind of the sugya ends up like Chachmei Eretz Yisrael. We don't know what Hananiah did. And in fact, it's complicated because the Gemara in Sukkah, I did a little research, the Gemara in Sukkah, the Chafam Beis, has Kanan, you engage in a machlokus about whether maktzulos are kosher for schach, mats are kosher for schach. And he says, when I was in Bavel, I heard a zakan and told me that they're kosher. And the chachamim accepted that. So he's obviously been back in Eretz Yisrael, and accepted, at least for a period of time, and accepted by his chachamim, by his colleagues. So he's no longer an outcast in Nidui. So the Bavli is so that Gemara and Sukkah, Bavli, is mashman that he was accepted by the Kehillah. No, because he's back from Bavel. It's hard to be back and forth and back and forth. It doesn't say that.
He's back.
He says, when I was in Bavel, I heard this from the Zakkan, the Maksalos of Kosher. So sounds like he was the Tshuva, so to speak. He accepted the authority. He was accepted by Chachmei Eretz Yisrael. Sounds like. So that's one point. And it's very interesting, and with this I'll conclude. The Gemara in Tainus, the Mishnah in Tainus, is a machlokus about when you say the same Talumata. When we in the Gola, we say December 3rd, December 4th, it's 60 days after the Tekufa. That was Hananiah's Psak. It's about 60 days. That was Hananiah's Psak against the Mishnah. And the Gemara says, we paskin like Hananiah and Bavel. Because Hananiah is in effect considered to be the leading Talmud Chacham in Bavel. So here you see the Bavli still has sympathy towards Hananiah, and they regard him as like the makor of Psak in Bavel. They follow him in Bavel. You have to follow Hananiah, because that's what Hananiah was saying. In Bavel, you wait the 60 days. We follow Bavel. In the United States, we're not in Bavel anymore, but because Bavel was marshy and their rain cycle was different, so he felt it was better to ask for rains later. Oddly, it's one of the paradoxes that the entire Gola follows Babylonian agricultural needs, but that was Hananiah's Psak. So here you have Hananiah on the one hand being regarded as the great posek for the whole Mesorah of Bavel, and here you see Hananiah back in Eretz Yisrael accepted by his peers, by his Talmidei Chachamim. In short, we're left hanging. There's an ambiguous end to this whole story. We don't really know what happened to Hananiah. He was accepted. Did he? The Gemara Sukkah seems to suggest that he did accept their authority. Certainly doesn't sound like it in the Gemara and Bavli, and even in the Yerushalmi. It's Rabbi Yehuda Beseiru seems to be the one who goes out on the horse. So we're left with an ambiguous end to what is a very complicated conflict between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael, between youth and old age, between Tom learning and authority. It's all against the background of Usha. Part of the reason asserting their authority so vigorously is because they wanted Usha to emerge, as I mentioned in the very, very beginning, as the center, the post-Yavna center of the Sanhedrin. Well, we can't have Bavel, people Paskin and Shilas in Bavel, that would undercut Usha as a new center for Torah learning. Now, Shimon Gamliel is the person trying to organize Usha. So we can't allow. So all these complicating factors, learning, bigger Talmidei Chachamim, less Talmidei Chachamim, Eretz Yisrael, Gola, Usha, not an Usha, do we need a center of authority, can we tolerate different points of view? That's all the issues, the themes that are raised by this. How vigorous, how aggressive can you be in debate? Do the ends always justify the means or not? Can you play with halach a little bit to achieve your political ends, which, by the way, some still happens nowadays in contemporary psak and life? And you also have the issue of an older Talmidei Chachamim dealing with young people who grew up. A Rebbe can never imagine his Talmidim ever being great Talmidei Chachamim, because there is Talmidim. They're always kids. With respect to my mother, I'm still a kid, even though I'm no longer a young child. So, he's saying, these are kids, they're telling me what to do. So, there's age is also a complicating factor. So this Gemara raises many, many different issues. And it's, the genius of the Gemara that it leaves us a little hanging. We have to think about these issues ourselves.